Nation. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, your Seahawks superfan. Boy, am I confused today. I don't know how to feel after what happened with the Cardinals game. We'll get to that later. Before we do, though, I want to thank our sponsor, BetDSI. That's BetDSI.com. Been in business for over 20 years. They should be your destination for online gambling. You can gamble on sports and on non-sports like the election. They will pay fast, they are safe, easy to use, and best of all, with our promo code FANUP10, you get a free $10 on your first deposit, plus a 100% bonus. So go to BetDSI.com, use promo code FANUP10, and let's try and figure out what the heck happened this week. Specifically, I'm trying to figure out what happened in that Sunday night game between the Arizona Cardinals and my Seattle Seahawks. My goodness, this is one of the strangest games I have ever seen. Ends in a 6-6 tie. Let that sink in for a second. A 6-6 tie. That's like a kind of high-scoring soccer game, not a NFL football team between what are considered two of the better teams in the league. This one, honestly, I should be thankful it ended in a tie. The Cardinals absolutely dominated this game, at least in terms of time of possession. The Seahawks offense couldn't do anything. They were horrendous. The offensive line, who, you know, I've talked about how they're getting a little bit better, even though they're a weakness. No, they were a disaster today. It was embarrassing. I can't believe the number of holding penalties I saw. Gary Gilliam left the game with an injury. So they brought in a rookie who didn't even play the position in college, and he wasn't any worse because Gary Gilliam is terrible. So if you can't tell, I'm a little down on the performance of this offensive line. But nobody on offense played great. Russell Wilson wasn't his normal excellent self. I think the wide receivers were probably okay, but I didn't really see an opportunity for them to get the ball thrown their way. Jimmy Graham was great in overtime, but it was rough to watch. Now, the Seahawks defense, I will say, was absolutely incredible. They were on the field for something like, 60 to 70 full minutes of football. They played two entire games worth of defense in this one game and held the Arizona Cardinals to 6 points still. Some of that is on the Arizona Cardinals. They actually did move the ball around a little bit. We're able to, flip field position periodically, things like that. But one punt was blocked. One field goal was blocked by Bobby Wagner being Superman and just jumping over the line. It made me realize I still have no idea exactly how the rules work for that, because he made contact, but apparently not enough contact for it to be a penalty. I don't know. But the defense was just terrific. They are the one unit on either team that probably deserved to come away with a win. The big mistake to me, though, was when it was fourth down deep into Seahawks territory and Bruce Arians decided, rather than taking what should have been an easy field goal, he went for it, and that, I think, ended up costing them the game. They would have won if they had those 3 points. And, yeah, of course, it's possible that could have been kicked, that could have been blocked, that it could have been shanked, but I just can't believe that there would be that many blocks and shanks in one game. So in the end, a tie favors the Seahawks since they already have a decent-sized lead over the Cardinals. But, you know, this is one that I think is going to leave both teams scratching their heads. I was sure the Seahawks had the game lost for so much of the fourth quarter. And then when they had the ball on, the 20-yard line at the end of overtime, I was sure they had it won. And then Steven Hauschka, who is typically a great kicker, but kicks very, very poorly in that stadium, shanked one of his own, and that's the game. So there we go, a 6-6 tie. Wow.
All right. So right now we're here to talk to Sam, the Giants super fan, coming off the end of the fantastic game between the Giants and the Rams of Los Angeles. Big win by the Giants. What'd you think of the game, Sam?
Well, if you woke up and you didn't get a chance to really wake up before the start of this game, there's a really good chance you fell back asleep. It was not exciting. The Rams offense, although they scored 10 points, couldn't do anything. Their first touchdown came after a fumble, after Larry, fumbled, and then they got a field goal, and that was about it. On the Giants, we really couldn't do anything either. Landon Collins played his best game to date, he's shown why he was that, you know, early pick with two picks, one being a touchdown. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie added two picks. I think this was a game of two mediocre teams playing tired, and the Giants won because they made less mistakes. I think that's the way I look at it.
All right. Now, if you're a Los Angeles fan, I'm just curious, at what point do you start calling for Goff to start playing? Casey Keenum did not look good this game. If you're a Los Angeles fan, what would your thoughts be as far as that's concerned?
So I don't think Goff can be worse than Case Keenum. So in that respect, I think it makes sense to get him snaps, but he would have no support out there, and I don't know how much you want to throw a rookie quarterback into a situation where he doesn't have a great offensive line, he doesn't have many weapons, his weapons are inconsistent as hell. I think just sit him, let him watch for a year, retool and give him better tools next year. I don't think him getting sacked a ton of times and not really having open targets to throw it was going to do anything for his development. But on the other hand, maybe, you know, getting a few snaps. But I wouldn't think it's fair to judge him based on anything he would do this season, and I just don't think it's fair to throw him in this situation.
Okay. All right. And, you know, kind of moving forward, you know, this brings the Giants, I believe this brings them to 4-3, you know, kind of right in the thick of it in the, you know, the NFC East. How do you kind of see that playing out over the next couple of weeks for your Giants?
Well, when we come back, we go on a bye next week and we come back and play the Eagles. You know, it's kind of tough because this defense has played pretty well. The offense has been god-awful. I think it needs a total retooling, a totally different game plan. You know, we don't have any running backs or a real line, and we just don't play into our strengths enough. Hopefully this bye week fixes come back. If we can get a win there, then, you know, our playoff chances get a little better. I don't think we're a very good team right now, so I don't think it really matters at this point. But, you know, for being as bad as we've played for seven games, ending up 4-3 is something new, because usually even when the Giants are playing well, they end up at 4-3, no matter how good they are. So, you know, it's better than 3-4. That's my takeaway from the end of this game.
All right. Excellent. Well, we look forward to, you know, talking to you, I guess not next week because you got the bye, but we'll talk in 2 weeks. And I know I'll talk to you getting ready on for the Friday podcast for the Daily Fantasy.
Yeah, we're recording this 10 minutes before the early games kick off, and I am frantically moving people in and out of one of my lineups. Good luck to all the fantasy players out there. I know I'm not going to be making any of the right plays today. I hope some of you out there are, or did, actually, at this point. All right, have a good day.
All right, you too.
Up next, we've got Andy, the Dolphins fan, talking about his team's wild win over the Buffalo Bills.
So it looks like we have a season. I mean, I think, you know, there are certain inflectionary points in every NFL season where certain teams realize that the guys that they have on the roster are stars in the making, and I think that's what the Dolphins have right now in Jay Ajayi. I mean, statistically, obviously, back-to-back 200-yard games, that's done. In franchise history, that's only been done once. I was in eighth grade. It was Ricky Williams in weeks 13 and 14, 2002. And, you know, from an eye test perspective, he looks the part too. You look at this Dolphins offensive line, it has four first round picks on it, and I guess they're finally starting to play like they're capable of. You know, going into the bye, I think I look at this team much, much differently than I did, you know, 2 weeks ago at this time, right after we lost to the Tennessee Titans at home. We beat the Steelers, bludgeoned them on the ground. We bludgeoned the Bills on the ground, and now we have the bye week, and we're going to welcome in a very underwhelming Jets team to Sun Life Stadium 2 weeks from now. If we win that game, all of a sudden, lo and behold, we're 4-4, and it's a completely new season. I never thought we'd be here. I was rooting for us to lose last week against the Steelers. I was rooting for us to tank. I'm not doing that anymore because I think, obviously, you know, we have a chance at this point. The defense still scares me, and against better quarterbacks and better receivers and better passing games, I don't think Byron Maxwell and Tony Lippett and company will be able to hold up, but obviously that remains to be seen. You look at the rest of the Dolphins' schedule, we play Brady week 17, we have the Cardinals, so we have Carson Palmer at home a couple weeks before that, but if you look at this Dolphins schedule, there aren't a lot of good quarterbacks that we face from here on out. So, you know, maybe that weakness is something that will be accounted for and covered up. I mean, time will tell. But obviously, right now, you know, there's a lot to be happy about in Dolphin land, and really going forward, a lot of the reason to be optimistic is that the players that are playing, with the exception of Cam Wake, who's 34, most of the players who are playing well for the Dolphins right now are young players who you would think would be a part of the team going forward for years to come. So a lot to be happy about. And, you know, that's really where we stand right now after week 7.
All right. And now we're here with Simon, the Cincinnati Bengals super fan. We're going to chat about the Bengals. Big home win in their division, picking up the win against the Browns by a score 31-17. All right. How you doing today?
Yeah, good. Well, tonight, really. But yeah, no, doing really, really good. Apart from my other team in sports is Manchester United, and they lost 4-0 to Chelsea. So not the greatest start to today, but ended very well.
That's all right. As long as your team wins, finish strong. What did you think of the game? What are your kind of highlights for you? What was your opinion of it?
So offense, good to make some positive moves. Cleveland are bad, like really bad. And I know that's obvious that they're 0-7, but it was very easy for us to make big plays for the first time all season, which was absolutely needed and great to see that. Good to see the running game get going a little bit, especially after, I think it's been kind of one of our weak points this season. So to have 270 yards on 30 carries was a great effort from our team. And defensively, I'm really, really worried, if I'm honest. Cleveland were able to move the ball well. I think that a lot of it was the Bengals could not control Kevin Hogan and the read option plays, because he went for 104 yards, which is incredible. But we are not quite the finished article, and it's always better to end the season stronger than you start it. But there are some serious chemistry issues with this Bengals team that kind of may ring true because of all the changes that we've had. And it's just, I'm not quite sure if we're a good team or not. I don't think we are a good team. I just think we played a really bad team today. We should have scored more than 31 points as well. Just a tough team to figure out at the moment, the Bengals. I know it's a 2-touchdown win, but it could have and should have been so much more. And I just don't think we're a team that's quite on it mentally as much as physically at the moment.
Well, this is the first week that you got Tyler Eifert back, right?
Yeah, it was. He had one catch, I believe.
Okay. I'm just curious what you think, you know, kind of moving forward. You know, you talked about finishing strong. You know, as the offense kind of gets more, you know, in sync with the new offensive coordinator, you get your guns back. Obviously, Eifert had, 13 touchdowns last year. It was obviously, you know, a big force. What's your thoughts on just kind of where Cincinnati stands so much, like the second half, you know, in the division? They're 3-4. But, I mean, no one's really run away with the division yet at this point. What do you think the possibility are that maybe the Bengals can make a little run to finish out the year and, you know, sneak out the division win?
Yeah, that's definitely the hope. Like I said, I just think there's some issues across the board where the depth isn't quite there. And I think just systematically this year, we're not looking kind of where we've been in the past. We look a little bit disjointed. So, but to your point, I think if we can continue to build on these performances and put a few together, then we'll be in with a shout, because we're now going level with Baltimore, who've now lost 4 in a row. Cleveland, obviously, way out of it at 0-7. Pittsburgh, 7 down at the moment as we record this. Without Ben Roethlisberger.
England actually just scored, so it's 14.
I'm even watching Red Zone as we do this, so this is how like how useless I am. But anyway, so yeah, I mean, do you think that game's already over? Because yeah, who comes back from 14 down against the Patriots? And Ben's out for a few weeks, so we've got a few chances. We play Pittsburgh at home, we've got Baltimore twice, Cleveland away again, so we can stack those wins up potentially in the division. And we have some tricky games, as we talked about off air, the Bills in a couple of weeks. We've got Washington next week in London, which I'm looking forward to watching live. And then a couple of other kind of tricky games, and nothing where you go, well, we can't beat those teams, because Philadelphia, New York Giants are teams that, you know, we could definitely beat. So I'm confident about putting a run on, but I don't think we can win the Super Bowl this year. And that's ultimately, as you know, what it's all about.
Yep, absolutely. So unfortunately, not all good news for Cincinnati. They are unfortunately losing their super fan after today. Unfortunately, Simon will be leaving us. So, Simon, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you, really, to first and foremost, Pod Vader, and ironically, Matt Williamson, who kind of accepted me back on the old show in 2011, I'm going to say. It was I was in my old flat in London, just on a whim, thought I'd go for it. And who I would never have known that 5 years later, I'd have met some incredible people. Not quite literally, but met some incredible people and some people I call my friends now. And it's been a great show to be a part of. Unfortunately, in my time, in my other kind of world as a worker, it's taking up too much of this. And it's a shame because it's, you know, what we've become as an entity is really impressive. And the passion of the fans and Pod Vader will continue to drive us forward. And it's been really hard to say goodbye to it. It's taken me a few weeks to really make the decision. But I hope that we can find a Bengals fan that can obviously improve on what I've done in the past and continue to represent the Who Dey Nation as best they can. But like I said, it felt the right time to go out with the Bengals coming to me, and therefore it almost being full circle on my time as a super fan. But just in summary, what a great experience with a great set of people, and people who are listening to this who aren't a super fan. It's just a great community that really, really believe that, you know, what we're doing is worthwhile and is different to the rest of kind of the world. So please continue to support the podcast. If you're a Bengals fan, please write in to apply for my position. But like I said, I'm just really thankful for the opportunity, and I'm going to miss it really quite a lot. So thank you.
Yeah, well, whoever they get as the Bengals super fans got some big shoes to fill. Thank you very much, Simon. And, you know, good luck in all your future endeavors.
Cheers, Robert. I appreciate it. And I'll catch you soon down the way.
All right, absolutely. All right, and we're back here. I'm with the Washington Redskins super fan, Neil. We're here to talk about the Redskins and the Lions going down to the wire. The Lions ended up beating the Redskins 20-17. Neil, what happened?
Hey, Robert. Not a great night for either of us, but here we go with Washington's rather disappointing defeat at the Detroit Lions. The score was 10-3 entering into the fourth quarter. It had been one of those games where, yeah, Washington had moved the ball fairly well, but unfortunately had committed a turnover, which they fumbled into the end zone for a touchback, which certainly took 3 points off the board. We hit the left upright with another field goal, which Hopkins should have nailed, to be honest. Detroit, having said that, also missed a field goal. So it was a very low scoring first three quarters. The only touchdown was Zach Zenner, who scored in a 1 yard touchdown run, and that gave Detroit a 10-3 lead going into the fourth quarter. And all of a sudden, all hell broke loose. there was players running up and down that pitch, gaining yards by the bucketful, and it was Washington who got themselves. Well, they got themselves 13-3 down to another field goal from Detroit. And then Kirk Cousins, he fumbled the ball, and you thought, oh, no, that's the end of it. It was a good drive as well, and you thought, nah, second turnover, we're not going to win the game from here. But he got the ball back, a good defensive stand for Washington, and he drove Washington down that field. And that's something we've noticed this year with Cousins. When he has made a play, which was an interception, just killed us. Last year, that would have killed us. This year, he's shown that development that he can take the ball again, show the confidence to drive the team down the field, and so he did. And Washington got a 1 yard touchdown pass from Rob Kelly, the running back who stopped quite a bit of action because could not hold on to the ball. I think he fumbled it twice in the game. Once he lost, like I said, he lost it into the end zone when we looked like we were going to score. And before that, he had lost a fumble, which he was very fortunate to recover. So Kelly was seeing a bit more time, and to be honest, I wouldn't mind seeing more of Kelly next week. Anyway, he scored in a 1 yard touchdown, 13-10 to Detroit. Then Washington made another defensive stand. And Cousins, and he got a 19-yard scramble. Designed run play, but he took it in and showed some good wheels. That put us up 17-13 with a minute and 5 seconds to go. And you thought, yeah, boom, here we go. 5-2, excellent start to the season. But what happened? Matthew Stafford drove his team down the field. They got the pass with just 16 seconds to go. It was, in all honesty, and you know, it's a shame we don't have a Detroit fan to talk about it. Come on, Detroit fans, where are you? He threw that 18-yard pass to Bolden. It was an outstanding drive and a drive that deserved to win a very, very close game. Say something, Robert, because I'm about to bang my head on the wall a few times.
Listen, I know the feeling. I know the feeling. Whiskey does the trick. One thing, though, this puts the Washington Redskins, that record-wise, still 4-3. How do you feel kind of going, you know, we're almost done with the first half of the year, that division still pretty tight, basically from top to bottom. How do you feel kind of going into the second half of the year, where you stand with the possibility of going in and winning that division?
Yeah, I think obviously Dallas looks like the best team in the division at the moment. We'll see what happens with the quarterback situation and how long that sort of very, very subdued offensive play can last them. As for Washington, 4-3, that's probably around where I would have had them after the first seven games. My concern going forward, Robert, is that, it looks like Josh Norman had a concussion tonight. That means he's probably fairly unlikely to travel to London next week. They won't put him through that long-haul flight, I wouldn't have imagined. So he's not going to be there next week. Trent Williams got a knock in this game right at the end of the game, our left tackle. We just cannot afford to lose him. He is our best player, full stop, on the Washington Redskins. And of course, with Jordan Reed still out with a concussion, and who knows his future. Injuries are starting to bite a little bit, and I would be concerned next week of who's going to cover AJ Green when we play Cincinnati. I'm going to be positive and still think they could make 9-7, 10-6, but it's going to be a real struggle in that NFC East, because the four teams, I think, in reality are probably all fairly on a similar level, I would have said. Robert, you might have a better view on that, being a bit more objective, not being in the division.
My opinion is just kind of, they're pretty close teams. I think obviously Dallas right now maybe a little bit ahead. But, you know, they're pretty close teams, so I think it's kind of fun to watch, you know, as the second half progresses, and a big part of it is obviously injuries.
I think the NFC East in general, out of division, are 15-3, I think, now, after the game so far. So it's obviously, the division's not as weak as everybody seems to think they are. So we'll see about that going forward. Do you mind if I say a few words on Detroit?
Go for it.
I would just say to Detroit fans out there, Matthew Stafford looks better this season and terrific tonight. You know, we've always seen Stafford to Calvin Johnson, Stafford to Calvin Johnson, but actually now he's not there. He's throwing the ball around a bit. He didn't have Theo Riddick tonight, who's his sort of comfort blanket. I thought Stafford played really well, and he looked good. The offensive line played really well, certainly in protection. Opening holes up for the running. They have a top runner there at the moment with the injuries they've got. So I was very impressed with Stafford. I would also say, yeah, their offensive line looked really good in pass protection. And I can see Detroit having a similar sort of record to Washington. I think the teams were very equally matched. You saw that tonight, I think. It was one of those games where there was only going to be a few points in it at the end. And they had a 3-point win, a bit of home field advantage. So, tough loss for Washington, but also some encouraging signs for us in Detroit. Detroit fans can be forward, I think.
All right. Well, excellent. Who you guys got next week?
We are traveling to, I think it's somewhere in the United Kingdom, wherever that is. And we're going to be playing the Cincinnati Bengals.
All right. Oh, that's right. You didn't talk about AJ Green. All right. Well, good luck next week, and we'll be sure to talk to you then.
Yeah, you too, Robert. Thanks a lot. Great you're doing your show tonight. Fantastic.
All right. Have a good one. All right. And we're here with the Indianapolis Colts superfan, Daniel, to talk about the win that the Colts got on the road against the Tennessee Titans, a little interdivision game, 34-26. Hey, Dan, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good. Game was back and forth for a while there, it felt like. So nice to get a win finally.
Heard that. Always nice to get the win. Give us your thoughts on the game, how you think it went. It looks like the game kind of went down to the wire, a lot of scoring in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, so early on it kind of felt like DeMarco Murray was just going to have his way with Indy, which he essentially did. Tennessee got away from him a little bit, I think. I think they should have pounded it out with him some more. But Indy got a couple early scores. And Pat McAfee returned with one of his onside kicks in the first half that Indy recovered. So that was pretty exciting. We saw it a lot last year where he would just line up and decide, hey, I'm going to try and kick because the defense isn't ready for it. But it looked like Tennessee was ready for it, and I just missed the ball when he tried to recover it. And Indy got that. That led to a field goal to get him up 17-6. And right before half, Tennessee has a nice drive for themselves to get it back down to 17-13 before half. And from there, Indy just had a lot of dumb penalties. It looked like they could have really ran away with the game if they wanted to, but dumb penalties after dumb penalties killed them. They had an interception called back for a roughing Delanie Walker, unnecessary roughness on him. And the middle linebacker, for no reason at all, just lays him out, lays into him, knocks him on the ground, and that negates a interception that would have put the game out of hand. Same drive, they get two or three pass interference calls on them. I think it ended up being three. So handed Tennessee a touchdown there that they didn't even want to have. And I don't know that the refs really paid attention on all of them. They called a pass interference on a guy that was on the sidelines. So I think that a couple of them were just some pretty bad calls. But came down to it late. Indy went in for the go-ahead touchdown, and the touchdown called back, a nice pass that was called back for an illegal shift. So just a lot of lack of discipline, I think, on this team from whether it's organization of the coaching staff or whether it's just the players that just haven't really had that continuity of having the same guys on the field a whole lot. It was Luck's different starting offensive line for the year, and they held up our nothing too great. Story of the game was Jack Doyle stepping up. He had huge catch after huge catch, it felt like, including the game winning touchdown. And it's great to have a reliable big tight end like Jack Doyle's been. He's worked his way away from some of those holding penalties he had early on in the year, and it looks like he's becoming a reliable target for Andrew Luck. And then towards the end of the game, the Colts had a nice strip on Mariota that Robert Mathis was able to run back to give him their 34th and final point. So all in all, pretty good game. One of the big standouts on the defensive line, I think, was T.Y. McGill. He beginning quite a bit, and he's the one that ended up getting the strip sack, but I think he put a lot of pressure on Mariota throughout the game and made a couple nice big defensive lineman plays as well.
Nice. So now this puts the Colts 3-4. How is your feeling kind of going into the second half of the year? I mean, no one's run away with the division, so even if though you have, you're under 500, I would think that there, you still have what's definitely a fighting shot to, get in front of this division. What are your thoughts kind of for the second half of the year?
And it's crazy because if they didn't have that meltdown at the Sunday night game against the Texans, they'd be in first place of the division. I'd be feeling great about the division. That meltdown killed them. And I think that that's going to be – I think that might come back on them. If Houston gets to 9 wins, that 9th win might be the one that cost Indy the division. But, I think they have a pretty tough schedule ahead, the Colts do. They still have the Chiefs, Packers, Steelers, all. So they have a lot of tough games left that I think they're going to have some pretty bad losses in there. Blowouts, just it comes down to the end and they're going to lose them, and then we're going to go back to that Texans game from last week and really will hurt us, I think. And maybe 8-8 wins the division, but I don't know if they'll be much better than 8-8 at this point in the season.
All right, well, thank you for the call, Daniel, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you. You too.
All right, and now we are here with the Saints superfan Chris. We're going to chat about the Saints game today. They unfortunately lost on the road to the Kansas City Chiefs, 27-21. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing, bud?
We are doing well. Well, tough loss. What are your thoughts on the game today?
you know, Arrowhead's always a tough place to go. Breeze had himself a really good game, especially on the road. There is a split between home and away games, as everybody knows, but 367, three touchdowns. He did have a pick today. He had a pick six that I'm putting on Willie Snead. He needs to come back to that ball and not let it get batted up in the air. But, you know, it is what it is. When you're as beat up as the New Orleans defense is, it's going to be a shootout every week, and you can't win all of those. So we're sitting at 2-4, and we got a really, really tough schedule coming up here. But the bright side is, I mean, we did have Tron Armstead back, which he looked very rusty, and he's still very clearly hurt, but we need, because we also are without Andres Pete. And in the coming weeks, it looks like we're going to start getting some of these players back finally. We'll be able to see Sheldon Rankins for the first time, Delvin Bro, since the I think he would have played two quarters this season in week one. You know, a lot of starters, a lot of NFL quality players are coming to help this defense. And I mean, look, as a Saints fan, you're hoping for maybe 7 to 8 wins this year. It's kind of what you were hoping for at the beginning of the season. We still have a shot at that. It's just we really, really need to get these players back soon.
All right. Not everything bad, though, for the Saints. Did want to ask you about kind of the emergence. I know he's a second-round pick this year, so at least a little was expected of him. But Michael Thomas had 10 catches for 130 yards. How's he been kind of progressing just the past couple weeks and kind of looking in that offense?
Well, this is what Saints fans have been waiting for. In training camp, he was making, you know, Odell Beckham-esque one-handed catches down the field. He was all over the place. He does not lack confidence. That is something his uncle Keyshawn Johnson has bestowed upon him. But he is he's an awesome route runner, and he's got great hands. This kid, he's got star written all over him. I wish we would have had him 2-3 years ago, because I think if we would have had him, you know, with more of Breeze's peak, more years of that, this kid would be an all pro quickly.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. So, I mean, moving forward, obviously, you got the a lot of people coming back. I'm personally excited to see Sheldon Rankins when he comes back. How do you kind of feel just the rest of the year, you know, with getting these guys back? You think New Orleans might be able to get on track and make a little bit of a run?
I don't. You know, we still have, I think in the coming weeks, is Seattle and then Denver. Rankins is not available till week 9. Bro is running, and Bro is really the big one, because this cornerback position is just depleted. We're playing today. We came in with Crawley and Webb. I think Crawley's the only one who's actually on the roster week 1. I mean, we're patching this together. So I don't think we have a shot at the wild card this year or playoffs. You know, but the plus side, we do get to play Carolina again. We get Tampa twice. Hopefully we can pay back Atlanta. So I think 7 wins is possible. I think that's the best we're looking at.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, and good luck next week.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
Absolutely.
This is Justin, your Seahawks superfan, here to recap the Oakland Raiders win over the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is a game that really had a lot of storylines. Oakland and Jacksonville, I think a lot of people saw in similar places going into the season. Two up-and-coming teams with really good pieces that might be ready to take that next step. It seems clear at this point that the Oakland Raiders have taken that step. They're 4-0 on the road. They're 5-2 overall. They're just right behind the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC West. Jacksonville Jaguars at 2-4 are floundering. Gus Bradley, who I like quite a bit, might be on the hot seat right now and might be looking for a new job next year. Derek Carr for the Raiders played a really, really good game. Only threw for 200 yards, but he was efficient. Threw a touchdown, no interceptions. Blake Bortles threw 2 interceptions. You know, for me, the big story for Oakland, though, has got to be what Michael Crabtree is doing. I mean, he's been a revelation. You know, nobody really wanted him that badly after he left the 49ers, and he's just absolutely thriving in Oakland. He seems to have just a terrific rapport with Derek Carr. Amari Cooper only had a couple of catches, and so when he doesn't show up, it's really important that they have somebody like Michael Crabtree who can carry the load. Latavius Murray had a couple of touchdowns, but didn't necessarily do a ton on the ground. But overall, just top to bottom, Oakland offense, defense, all around, played a great game. Jacksonville, you really can't say that's the case. Marquise Lee racked up a bunch of yards for what that's worth. But the big concern for me has got to be the star wide receiver, Allen Robinson. He was pretty much non-existent once again, and this is several games now this year. My hope is that it's just a chemistry thing and he and Blake Bortles get back on the same page, because I really think he's one of the very best wide receivers in the game. But as it is right now, the Oakland Raiders are in a dogfight for the first place in their division, and the Jacksonville Jaguars are looking more and more like they're going to be looking for a new head coach come next year.
All right, and we are here with James, the Eagles fan, to talk about what might have been the game of the week, Philadelphia Eagles playing in the Link, getting the win 21-10 over the previously unbeaten Minnesota Vikings. How you feeling?
I'm feeling elated about this win. A very good bounce back after the last 2 weeks. Some bad losses, so we got that taste out of our mouth, and it was a solid defensive effort all around.
Nice, nice. Notwithstanding the first quarter, where lots of turnovers, kind of, how did you feel about just like the offense and just the whole team effort during the game? Anyone that stood out to you in particular?
On offense, no one, to be perfectly honest. The big thing I was looking at, which I've been watching the last couple of weeks, is the offensive line play and the scheme that they were going to use to protect Vitae. I still can't say his first name. I'm not even going to try. But right tackle replacing Lane Johnson for the next 8 or so weeks. They actually opened up the game with the first play having a tight end outside of him, and they committed to doing that for the majority of the game. Now, the first quarter notwithstanding, with 5 straight turnovers by both teams, Vitae played pretty well. Towards the second half, they did start leaving him with one-on-one with those defensive ends. He held his own pretty well, but for the most part, he still got help from a tight end on the outside or a chip from a running back, which is what they should have done last week against Washington, and they did it for the majority of the game this time instead of just starting late. On defense, complete just lockdown everywhere with the exception of the late give-up score at the end, which is only because penalties forced a first-and-goal situation back to the 45. But defense was solid. The front four pretty much got pressure. Like you said, 6 sacks, a couple of fumbles, interception. Sam Bradford couldn't even get a chance to get the ball downfield. And when he did, it was overthrows, underthrows, or just errant passes. The defense was lights out today.
Nice, nice. Yeah. Big win for you guys. Sits you at 4-2. How do you feel kind of going the rest of the way just with the NFC East? Fairly jumbled up as far as everyone's fairly close. I mean, no one's definitely running away with it. How do you feel going into the second half of the year? Philadelphia's chances of possibly taking the division down?
I'm actually kind of nervous about 3 of the next 4 games. 2 are division games on the road again. We're at Dallas, at New York, home against Atlanta, I believe, at Green Bay after that of the next 4 games. I'm nervous, realistically, about all 4 of those games, more so the next 2 upcoming with Dallas and New York. The Giants there have to do better as far as securing the ball and taking care of it. Carson Wentz had a couple of fumble snaps. He needs to clean that up. These are big divisional opponents in the Giants, who we never know how those games turn out. And the way Dallas is playing right now, they're not running away with the division. They've had the bye this week. And, you know, they're sitting at 5-1 with the rest of the division over 500 with 4 wins each. So it's going to be pretty tight going down the stretch. I'm not sure what Dallas is going to be looking at as far as us going and, you know, coming off their bye week, but this is going to be a second opponent coming off a bye that we'll play. I hope we can keep the defense going, and they have a running game that once it gets started, it'll be pretty hard to stop. And judging by what happened last week against Washington, we cannot have another performance like that. If we give up anywhere close to 200 yards, forget anything being close. We're going to get blown out.
All right. Well, James, thank you for the call, and good luck next week.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right. And we're here to talk about the Jets and the Ravens game today. Joining us is the Ravens superfan, Don, and the Jets superfan, AJ. How are you guys doing today?
I'm good, Rob. I'm kind of disappointed that you introduced the losing team first, and the Jets don't get to win very often.
I'm sorry, I was going alphabetical.
It's all right.
All right, so I'll start with you then. What were your thoughts on the game today? At a nice little victory against the Ravens.
Nice little victory. just classic Jets again. I thought the Jets were going to win this game. I wrote in my write-up that, none of the matchups really favor the Jets, but they're going to find a way to win the game and screw themselves out of a draft pick. And it kind of seems that's going to happen. And it's not even – it's worse than that, because it's not like they had an unknown quantity or a somewhat unknown quantity and Geno Smith lead them to victory. Geno got hurt, and we were stuck with Ryan Fitzpatrick again, who after the game came out and said,
"Yeah,
it's the owner doesn't believe in me. The GM doesn't believe in me. Sometimes you just got to believe in yourself, and no one else believes in me in this building. And it's hard to play that way." Dude, listen, your entire career, no one has believed in you. So why all of a sudden do you think this is anything different? You know, like play like this, play like no one believes in you every single week, and then maybe the Jets wouldn't be 2-5. But I don't want to come off of sounding too downtrodden after a win, because there's not going to be many of them. But I say that now, then you take a look at the Jets' schedule, and they had the easiest remaining schedule in football. So here's 12th pick. Here we come.
And Don, what are your thoughts about the game today?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts, we'll put it that way. I don't mean to put you guys on the spot, but I do have a pop quiz for you. Do you know how many yards the Ravens rushed for today?
I would say, I got a box score in front of me, so I'm probably not
prepared. I'm gonna guess, and I like playing this game, because I like being the guy to ruin it, and sort of because you're supposed to guess high and then have it be low. But I'm gonna guess 20 yards.
Oh.
You're way high on this. It is the franchise low for rushing yards. The answer is 6. 6 rushing yards. Now Matt Forte ended up having a good game, obviously, with his touchdowns. He cracked over 100 yards, but he got 30 carries to get there. Whereas, it's absolutely mind-boggling. I know we have injuries in the offensive line. I know we have injuries, with Steve Smith. I know we have injuries at linebacker, but it's just baffling that I know the Jets are a good run defense, but so are the Ravens. But the Jets kept at the run. 30 carries for Forte. Bilal Powell had his. I mean, thankfully, the one thing I do know is that we're not going to lose next week because we're on a bye. But even watching the Patriots-Steelers game today, we'll have the Steelers at home on our next game. They're coming off of a bye as well. Even if it's Landry Jones, I don't have any confidence in that. I mean, Flacco looks, right now, he looks like he's playing scared. I don't know if the knee injury from last year has anything to do with it. I would assume that most of it has to do with the offensive line, because they're just getting blown off the ball every time. I mean, hopefully this bye week gets Marshall Yanda healthy at right guard. Hopefully we get Ronnie Stanley back at left tackle and shift some things back to the way they were. Flacco's just throwing – passes high, passes behind his receivers. I know we don't have the best receiving core by far, but I mean, it's just very disheartening. And again, 6 rushing yards when how much you're running the ball, helps this offense. Defensively,
right.
I mean, defensively, their worst play was injuring Geno Smith, because I feel like maybe they wouldn't have won, maybe it would have been a little bit closer, but Fitzpatrick obviously came in and did a hell of a job, off the bench, and just had a lot of big plays. Go ahead.
So, you're talking about Fitzpatrick and Geno. Fitzpatrick played well, but it wasn't like he was chucking a ball down the field and throwing his receivers open. I mean, there was a lot of screen passes. There were a lot of short passes. There were a couple of passes over the middle that were pretty nice, including one to Brandon. I think it was Brandon Marshall. But even from the beginning, you're watching Geno Smith, and you could already see that he gives you something that Fitzpatrick doesn't. And that's like, you watch Fitzpatrick throw an out route, and it takes him an hour to get rid of the ball because he has to put so much effort into the throw, which allows One, it allows defensive linemen to jump up and bat the ball. And two, it allows the guys in the secondary to make a break on it, which is why he's so interception prone. Listen, Geno Smith isn't the bastion of ball security either, but he's able to get that ball out quicker with more zip, and it gives your offense more upside. But you could also argue it might give you more downside. But at this point, if you're the Jets, you're 1-5 coming into this game, you might want to get a look at Geno Smith, especially because he's a free agent. But back to the Ravens, the thing that I was surprised about was that they didn't throw the ball down the field more. The Jets are known to be one of the worst deep passing defenses in the league. And on Baltimore's second drive, they hit Mike Wallace for a 57-yard catch, which in stride, a beautiful play. But then I don't remember seeing another bomb. I mean, there were a couple of intermediate throws, and I think two of them were picked. But I didn't see any deep throws the rest of the game. I mean, maybe there was one or two. I was watching a couple other games at the time, but that really surprised me. The rushing game didn't surprise me. I'm saying that now, even though I did start Terrence West in Fantasy League, but Terrence West wasn't going to run on the Jets today.
I think
that defensive line is pissed off. You mentioned the losses on the Ravens offensive line. I just thought that it was going to be a classic throwback Ravens offense where they chuck the ball downfield, either hope for a catch, hope for pass interference. I mean, that's how they basically won the Super Bowl in 2012. And it was surprising to me to see them throw these little short passes and just keep running into the Jets' wall of the defensive line. So the Ravens started 3-0, they're 3-4. The Jets are 2-5. I don't think either of these teams are going to make the playoffs. But
no.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think the Jets might have a better shot. I'm looking at it now. I mean, maybe the bye week's coming at a perfect time for Baltimore and people are going to get healthy. But, I look at this Baltimore team. I don't see a single thing on their team that I look at and go, that's what they do great. At least I know the Jets stopped the run great. At least I know the Jets stopped the run great and that, maybe they have good receivers when they're healthy. And I think that's obviously Decker's not coming back, but the Jets do have some young receivers who are looking pretty impressive. Quincy Enunwa ran away from the entire Ravens defense on a 70-yard touchdown. And Robbie Anderson and Sharon Peake both made nice plays. And I'm not even bringing up Brandon Marshall. So, there are some things to look forward to as a Jets fan, even though it's a lost season. But I look at the Ravens, and they're one of the most brutal watches in the league, and I kind of feel bad for you, Don.
Yeah, I mean, to go back to the Quincy Enunwa touchdown, Lardarius Webb, it just has to go. I mean, he's obviously an older guy. He's out of position at safety. There's no recognition there. And most of all, he's just slow. There's no kind of speed on the defense. I was surprised that they ended up having 5 sacks because I did not anticipate that. A lot of it came, a lot of it came from the interior, which is always promising. You would say that they have a lot of work to do, but I mean, we're, 7 games into the season. It's not like you can swap guys in like you're in the preseason. You know, they are what they are at this point. Obviously, the bye week is good. Hopefully, they get healthy. But I'm not anticipating a huge rebound. I'm not anticipating a wild card berth at this point. Obviously, the past 4 games are just absolutely brutal.
All right, Rob. So I think that's it. I think we kind of went pretty long for teams that are combined. What is it now? 5-9? So we'll let you get back to covering some actual good football and leave you to sort of rest on your I wouldn't say rest on your laurels because that's kind of the opposite of what I mean. I'm just at a loss for words at what Buffalo did with LeSean McCoy today. So I'll just let you go ahead and deal with that.
We talked about that off air where I'm a little stunned and not very happy. But, I, as a Bills fan, I'm kind of used to not being very happy with my team. So what are you going to do? but thank you very much, guys, and good luck next week. You're in a bye next week, Don, right?
Thankfully, yes. I can rest my liver. I can rest my mind. They can rest their bodies. Yeah, so we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Good to know you were listening, Rob.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
All right. See you guys.
All right. So right now we're here to talk about the San Diego and Atlanta football game. So with me is Tim, who is the Atlanta Falcons super fan, and also Ken, who is the Chargers super fan. So what I'm going to do is just let you two kind of talk about the game. Tim, your thoughts?
Let's start with Ken, just to keep it positive.
All right, Ken, if you want to give – by the way, the score of the game 33-30, San Diego. So, Ken, if you want to lead the way, and we'll go from there.
So, first of all, I think the preview that Tim and I released to you guys was pretty spot on. It was a barn burner, and we got the score almost right, just a few field goals there instead of touchdowns. And then second, I want to address the pass interference no call on the last drive that the Falcons had on Julio Jones that would have put him much closer to kick a field goal rather than the 58, and it was absolutely blown by the NFL. And then my final point before I kick it over to Tim is the Chargers have endured close losses for 2 years now, and I have not gotten one. And so when you're a fan of a team that is like in a close game, you get really, really anxious. And that anxiety has always led to a loss for the last 2 years. And today, no loss. This is the first one. Did I get gifted it by the NFL? Yes. Do I feel bad about it? Absolutely not.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've seen a lot of these, you know, close losses too. So completely understand, you know, where you're coming from. But it's just... I'm at my wit's end right now. Like, is Julio Jones the Cam Newton of wide receivers? Like, legitimately, I understand that he is a machine, and I understand that he should legitimately catch every single thing that comes his way, but can I just get a single call once a week? I mean, I'm talking like there were like three of them on Julio today. And all I want is that last one. And I get it. We'd only get 7 yards off of that. But at that point, we would have had the 6 seconds that we had to run the last play where we got a few more yards to get to the 58-yard field goal. I'm at my wit's end with this game right now. And I have no reason to be. Like, we blew this. We had a 17-point lead and then gave it away at the end of the second quarter. And we couldn't score another touchdown. So, you know, I mean, takeaways, Tevin Coleman's hurt again. Awesome. So that's pretty much when things started going downhill last year is when we had to put it all in Devontae Freeman. And I mean, Devontae's great, but, you know, Tevin gives us that, you know, a little bit faster, a little bit better out of the backfield, at least this year. So it'll be interesting to see how far this free fall continues now that this is two games in a row. But hey, man, good job to you. I was playing against Philip Rivers in fantasy this week in my work league and lost to my boss. So, you know, not really feeling this week too much, to be completely honest.
My final thoughts are Bosa is an absolute lock for Defensive Rookie of the Year.
He's amazing.
Despite losing four games to start the season because he had two sacks today and he was awesome. And the Chargers are now very much playoff contenders. So I think the rest of the AFC West should be shaking in their boots.
I think the only good thing we have here is that the Falcons still have a lead in the division. I want to say it's only one game over, or maybe even half a game over Tampa Bay right now, but a lead is a lead. And, you know, I'm really nervous about our playoff hopes at this point, just being completely honest. I don't see the Falcons making the playoffs right now.
I think we'll both be fine.
I hope so. I'm going to go cry in the bathtub with like Celine Dion playing.
Believe me, I've been there. I've been there.
All right. Well, thank you very much, guys. As a Buffalo Bills fan, I can tell you, Tim, it does occasionally get better. I've been dealing with the same thing for about 16 years now. But thank you very much, guys. Tim, enjoy the whiskey. And we'll talk to you both next week.
Peace out.
Thanks.
All right. And we're here to talk about the 49ers and the Bucks game now. And I am joined by the San Francisco 49ers super fan. How you doing?
Good, good. The team, not so much, but I'm doing well.
Yeah, rough game. I actually saw a little bit of it just because I'm in the South Florida market where then they showed the Tampa Bay game. Yeah, give us a quick kind of synopsis on the game. What went right for you? What didn't go right? All that fun stuff.
There's not really a lot to say that went right for the Niners. They got up to a 14-0 lead. Everything looked, very, very good. Kaepernick had a really good, strong first drive, put up 7 points, and then on the very – oh, gosh, it was probably two possessions in, the Niners were able to get an interception of Jameis Winston. Gerald Hodges had it, and then Kaepernick actually, rolled wide right, extended a play, threw the ball over to Sean Drone, got a touchdown very next play. Up 14-0, everything was pretty optimistic, especially on 49ers Twitter. I pretty much held my breath because this is exactly how the Dallas Cowboys game went. Niners were up in that game, and the inability to stop the run, it's historically bad. They gave up 100 yards to Jaquizz Rodgers in the first quarter. So when you do that to a team, eventually they're going to be able to get you on play action, and that's what they did. Mike Evans and Jameis Winston went off. It was I believe they had 2 touchdowns, and then pretty much Jaquizz Rodgers and the backup running back there for the Bucks just destroyed the Niners.
Yes, it's tough. Oh, sorry. It's tough sledding right now for the 49ers, 1-6 after the loss to Tampa Bay. But, kind of moving forward, is there any bright spots kind of looking in the second half of the year? Any maybe younger individual players that you're kind of excited, to see, them progress? As the team kind of builds talent through the rest of this year and next year?
Well, I definitely thought first-round pick DeForest Buckner had probably one of his best games today. Not a lot of stuff to fill the stat sheet, but, had a couple of tackles for loss where he's beasting an offensive lineman at the same time as making the tackle. So excited to see that. Also, pretty fired-up individual. When the Niners were starting to get ran on, he started to, really retaliate on some of the offensive linemen for the Bucks. So I was excited to see him still fighting, even though at that point the game was pretty much all but spoken for. So excited for D'Flo. Then Rashard Robinson was also another player I was excited for. He was the rookie corner out of LSU, really, really good the last couple weeks. But he went off on a stretcher with a broken ankle, so we'll probably see him next year. And then Carlos Hyde was hurt, so Sean Drone, Mike Davis got the start, and then Sean Drone came in. But also I was very excited to see the former Packer DeJuan Harris play very, very well in relief. But other than that, there really wasn't a lot to look at and be excited about.
All right, fair enough. I remember Rashad coming out during the draft, and I was really hoping the Bills got him. And I remember him making a couple plays when San Fran played the Bills a couple weeks ago. All right, well, thank you for your time, and good luck next week.
Yep, thank you. Take care.
You too.
This is Justin, the Seahawks superfan, recapping the Patriots versus the Steelers. Not my two favorite teams, I'll be honest. I must have drawn the short straw on this one, but I will do my best to be, I guess, equally biased against both of them for what that's worth. This is a game that I think everybody expected to be a blowout. The Patriots tend to have the Steelers number anyway, and without Ben Roethlisberger and a few other players due to injury, I don't think anybody thought this was going to be close. But actually turned out to be a pretty decent game. Landry Jones was not a total embarrassment, although he did have one critical interception in the red zone, in the end zone as a matter of fact. The game stayed pretty close there through halftime, even into the third quarter before the Patriots started to separate. Then Rob Gronkowski had a nice touchdown catch off of a great throw from Tom Brady. LeGarrette Blount had a nice touchdown run. And then, the score ended up looking more lopsided than it was. But I was having a conversation with Ken, the Chargers fan, and he's kind of got me wondering, are there any elite teams in the NFL? I don't know that there are. I mean, here's a Patriots team that was taking on an AFC rival, but one that was really, really depleted, and they, you know, couldn't do what you would expect them to do and absolutely smash on them. They also lost to the Buffalo Bills. Yeah, they were without Tom Brady, but, you know, if missing your star quarterback is an excuse, how to explain this game against the Steelers? You know, it just kind of got me wondering if, you know, the league really has achieved sort of a level of parity we haven't seen much lately. That being said, I still think overall the Patriots are clearly the best team in the AFC. You know, going forward, games like this, you know, I just sort of wonder, you know, if there's anybody who's just a complete team. Le'Veon Bell was pretty well contained, which makes sense. I mean, without Ben Roethlisberger, of course, they're going to key up on Le'Veon Bell and do the typical Bill Belichick thing and take away their key weapons. Antonio Brown went over 100 yards because he's Antonio Brown, and he can't really be contained. But you go down the New England line, you know, Gronkowski got his. Julian Edelman continues to play well. Chris Hogan only had a couple of catches, but you know, it's good to see James White being active again. You know, he's a pretty nice player, and I think he's a weapon that the Patriots can really take advantage of going forward. At the end of the day, though, you know, the gap skill-wise between the players that were on the field for the Patriots and the Steelers was pretty evident. So at least at this point, the Patriots clearly in control of the AFC. That's it, guys. That's the end of the recap show. Big thank you to Robert, the Bills fan. You may have noticed his voice throughout for stepping up, filling in for Nick. I thought he did a terrific job hosting. So thank you so much, Robert. Again, thank you to all the super fans. Thank you to you guys for listening. Thank you to PodBeta for running this whole dang show. And thank you to our sponsor, BetDSI. With that, I'm going to send it over to Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.